Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Lots of them on Fridays. That concludes the Bright Side segment. Where are you going to be in about an hour and a half? At 2:40 or so, we'll do the Bright Side. That'll be your chance to call in and tell us some good news. You'll be able to text or tweet it in as well. Either way, the phone number is 312-981-7200. This is WGN Radio. That's how you get a hold of us here. And the Bright Side on Fridays is how we start the weekend. Right before Ro and Anna get into the studio, we say, tell us some good news in your world. And it could be a big thing. It could be a little thing. It could be, hey, I'm excited about the basketball game, or my baseball team had a good first day. Lord knows, Ian Happ and the Cubs and the Sox did. What a fun day for baseball in Chicago yesterday was. And it could be something small. It could be something big. Whatever's making you happy, we want to hear it. We want to hear the good news, the Bright Side, at 2:40. Incidentally, my sister Mary and her husband and their kids are in Chicago today. They are over at McCormick Place. McCormick Place has right now set up inside McCormick Place 200 volleyball courts. And many thousands of young ladies from around the country are in town for some ginormous volleyball-thon. And so there's teams from Kentucky playing teams from Michigan, and the Chicago area is well represented. If you see a bunch of tall young ladies walking around Chicago today, they are here for the volleyball tournament. I was at the West Egg eating breakfast this morning, and good grief, was that place packed with volleyball players. So I hope you all have a good time over there. So what a story in the, what was it, the Tribune that I saw? There's this reporter who said, and I don't know how it is that he decided to make the bet that if Ian Happ hits a leadoff home run, he'll jump into Lake Michigan. But he made the bet, and Ian did. And so, Elif, you got the audio ready, right? This is what it sounded like.
My name is Michael Cerami from BleacherNation.com. For today's Cubs game, I made a bet that I'd jump into Lake Michigan if Ian Happ hit a leadoff home run. That's exactly what he did, and I'm a man of my word. So here goes nothing.
Takes off his jacket and hat and runs into Lake Michigan and dives in.
Good, good.
Stands up, throws his arms in the air, and then runs right out. How that didn't kill him is beyond me. Michael Cerami's on the phone. Michael, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good. A lot warmer than yesterday, for sure.
How shocking was the water?
It happened really fast, and I don't know that was the whole point. And as soon as it hit my shin, I dove straight into the water. I had planned on running out further, so my dive had less of a chance to hit the ground, but I couldn't put it off any longer, so I dove right in, and it was very cold.
Was it painful? Was it painful? Did it take your breath away?
Not super painful, but as you can tell by my Go Cubs chant, and that was about five octaves higher than my regular voice, it definitely hit me. I wasn't quite expecting that, and the adrenaline quickly wore off, so it didn't exactly hurt, but it definitely affected me.
Well, obviously you had somebody with you because someone had to take the video, but I'm telling you, I was worried about you when I heard about this. I thought, well, he didn't go into Lake Michigan because that's too cold. And when they do those sort of, you know, jump into the lakes, what do they call those things where you jump into the lake?
The polar plunges.
They have a medical staff there. Not a buddy.
No, I just had a friend of mine, Danny Kitzinger, come, who also happens to work from home. As a reporter, I work from home. And I had let him know about my bet before Ian Happ hit the homer, and I asked him if he would help me if it happened, jokingly, because I did not expect it to happen under any circumstances. But
what made you decide to play
him, and he came over and drove me to the beach
To watch you die. What inspired, I mean, to me that's kind of an obtuse random bet. What made you decide to bet that?
Well, Ian Happ was fighting for the Cubs leadoff spot this spring, and he ended up hitting 7 home runs, 5 of which were leadoff home runs, which was just something that was particularly unique and interesting. So as almost jokingly pointing to the fact that he was so dominant towards spring training, I said, if he does it again today, which obviously is not going to happen, I'll jump into Lake Michigan. And of course, first pitch of the season, straight out of the ballpark. So that was my luck, but I was happy to do it.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, because we're all, I mean, if that is a harbinger of things to come, hooray. Was the bet that he has to do it in his at-bat or on the first pitch?
You know, that was probably left vague as an out for me, but it didn't matter either way.
Yeah, what's the now that you mention it. And had you posted that on Bleacher Report or some other location? Because say you and your buddy make the bet and then nobody else is the wiser, you know, you don't have to maybe make a splash after all. How public was your bet, and were people getting back to you right away saying, okay, dude, you got to go jump in the water?
So I didn't post it on Bleacher Nation. I did tweet it from my official account, which is tied to Bleacher Nation.
Yeah.
But what I did is I knew that, you know, we have our community at the site is pretty close-knit, and I knew if I made a statement like that, it would get picked up by our readership pretty quickly because they would love to see me do something like that if it actually happened. So as soon as I tweeted it out, I got a ton of responses right away. And I think that first tweet actually ended up having – more likes and retweets than the video because people were so anxious to hold me to it before the video came out. You know, right. They were like, oh, you made the bet. You got to do it. So, you know, it was all in good fun, but it definitely received a lot of attention right away, which is why I sent out the I'm already regretting this tweet right after.
Michael Cerami's on the phone, reporter at BleacherNation.com. How many hits or video views did you get?
You know, I haven't checked. The last time I looked, it was around 200,000 views. So I have to check back in, but it definitely got plenty of airtime, and yeah. I got lots of texts from people I haven't spoken with in a few years laughing at my misfortune.
Well, I saw that video, and I thought, okay, you know, good for you, and I get it. You got to do it. But there was no commentary about how stunning that must feel, because I swim in Lake Michigan every summer, and if I just dive in the summer, the water is cold enough that it literally takes your breath away. You go, you have trouble breathing. It's some sort of reaction human beings have, and to dump into that water right now, I thought, dude, you're gonna have a heart attack.
Well, I did my best to avoid all of the weather forecasts and lake temperature tweets that were getting sent my way because people had a lot of fun with that also.
I'll bet.
And I thought the less I know and the quicker I can do this, you know, the better it'll
yeah.
be.
Pull the Band-Aid off.
The Band-Aid. Yeah.
Hey, congratulations to you, Michael. It sounds like you've got a good eye for a good story and a good video, and you need them both. Michael Cerami at BleacherNation.com. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks.
Have a good day. Congratulations again to Michael Cerami, the reporter at BleacherNation.com, a young Chicago kid making his mark who dove into Lake Michigan yesterday to honor the bet after Ian Happ hit that Cubs leadoff home run. LF, what's the water temperature in Lake Michigan, please?
40 degrees.
Well, that's warmer than I thought. I'll bet 40 is still pretty cold, but 40 degrees. Has anybody jumped in Lake Michigan when it's really cold? It literally takes your breath away. 40 degrees. This from the latest issue of The New Yorker. On June 6th, after President Trump tweeted some criticism of the news media, a reporter, Rebecca Buckwalter-Poza, replied, "To be fair, you did not win the WH. Russia won it for you." President Trump, from his @RealDonaldTrump Twitter handle, then blocked Buckwalter-Poza, meaning that he would not see any more of her responses, and Buckwalter-Poza would no longer see any of the president's tweets. That made her one of at least 100 people that Trump has blocked. It's now in a federal district court in Manhattan. Buckwalter-Poza is one of 7 Twitter users, including a surgeon in Tennessee, a police officer in Texas, and so on, who have joined a lawsuit against the president, arguing that by blocking them, he had violated their First Amendment rights. Think about that for a second. Later in this New Yorker article, they say after expressing a regal distaste for Twitter, the judge called something that I don't consider appropriate for judges to engage in. She demonstrated that she understood the social media platform. She brought the courtroom to near silence with an idea that cut through the fog of the lawyer's verbiage. To the extent, she said, that the reason the president has blocked these individuals is because he does not welcome what they have to say, he can avoid hearing them simply by muting them. Twitter offers its users two options to avoid seeing the tweets of others. Trump used the block function, which means that he would not see a particular person's tweets and that that person could no longer see or respond. Muting offers an intermediate step. Trump would no longer have to see the tweets of those he disdains, but they could still see and respond to his tweets. By the end of the hearing, Judge Buchwald did not indicate which way she was leaning. As the proceedings wound down, Baer, one of the attorneys, argued that the president should be immune from even having to address these claims. This prompted an arched eyebrow from the judge, who said, "And he's above the law?" "No, Your Honor," the attorney replied. "I just wanted to check," said the judge. It's an interesting question, though. I wonder what the greater offense is. That the president can't see you and what you think, or that you can't see him, right? They're saying that by blocking you, it's muting your freedom of speech. I don't know that I see it that way so much as that I think it's an issue if, as a voting U.S. citizen, voting or otherwise, actually, I think you have the same right as every other citizen to see what the president is saying.
I think the White House has said that they're sort of official statements, right? He speaks officially when he speaks on Twitter.
Sure.
So how do you cut an American off from that?
Even though this is a personal account, technically he uses it officially, it's a personal account. It's not White House. It's not the, what's the Twitter handle for the president via the White House? But this is the real Donald Trump account.
Well, but the White House has been asked about that specifically, and they said when he tweets, he speaks officially.
This reporter, Rebecca, who got blocked, joins us now on WGN. Hi, Rebecca. You're on the air. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me.
What's your reaction to the conversation you've heard so far?
That indeed happened. The President of the United States personally blocked me, and I would like my First Amendment rights restored. So all on the same page.
Yeah. Although, do you understand my point? I mean, I wonder what the greater offense is, him not being able to hear you or you not being able to hear him.
You know, to me, it's that no one else can hear me. And who knows if he'll ever see my replies, but every other person who's tuning in to his Twitter account and responding and reading other people's responses, they're getting a very one-sided view of how people are responding to him. And I'm being denied the chance to really participate in that conversation in the same way. But
you are,
us, you know, both me and the audience, we're being hurt.
Yeah, although you and I both read the, I guess you still must gain access to his Twitter account, and the vast majority of the things posted there are uber critical of him. It's no love fest at Real Donald Trump.
Well, it's, you know, either way, the First Amendment says that he can't block people from a public forum based on viewpoint. So, I mean, if anyone's willing to hit block enough times, you can turn that forum into whatever you want it to be. So if he kept going, I mean, that would create a real hazard. Anyone who tunes in who doesn't have an opinion yet or doesn't know what's going on would get the impression that it is a love fest.
Well, here's the president's attorney said essentially, say it was a convention hall and people are coming in to hear the president and the president to hear them. Only so many people can get in. Not everybody has equal access or unfettered access to the president. So so Twitter is just a virtual town hall meeting. What's the response to that?
Well, I mean, to me, it seems more like he's deciding who can speak at the town hall. It's not really, it's he's deciding who can even try to get access to him. And that's, you know, on the basis of what we think. And that's what's not allowed. I don't think it's so much like a conference as the town hall analogy, which is, you know, kicking someone out based on what they're saying.
Yeah, but
you invite us there to share our opinion.
If I may, though, Rebecca, it seems to me like at the proverbial town hall meeting here, in fact, they do that. If you wanted to go to one of Trump's rallies, it seems to me those are very partisan affairs. There's not a lot of dissent at those things, right?
Sure.
And really, he's just doing the same thing on Twitter, in your case anyway. He's saying, I don't want that person.
Oh, no, but he's not.
Sure he is. I don't want you in there because I don't like what you're saying.
Well, it's a difference, though, because he's not making official statements and he's not conducting official business through his rallies. He is through his Twitter account.
The
Department of Justice keeps a record of his tweets. The White House has said they should be treated as official statements. He's making policy via Twitter. So he's the one who's changed this into a sort of two-way interaction. That's not what you think you're going to get when you go to a rally, right?
No.
But that is what he's created by creating his Twitter account and by using it in his official capacity.
Got to admit, though, it's pretty cool to be blocked by the president, right? I mean, there's 330 million of us, and maybe he's blocked 100. It's sort of like, you know, not having your record played on the radio. Sales go up. Has this somehow increased your profile or prestige?
It certainly hurt me on Twitter as a journalist. And I've got to say, I'm less thrilled with it than chilled by it, because it's a scary thing to feel like the president personally suppressed my speech. But no, for me as a journalist, it's really important to be able to engage with people. I mean, that's the hot spot, the marketplace of ideas. So I have lost Twitter followers, had fewer opportunities to talk to other writers and editors in a sort of direct way and immediately respond. And it makes me a little slower on my feet when it comes to analyzing what he's putting out on Twitter.
I understand that. It's a good answer. But in fact, the communication is just blocked between you and the president, right? You and I can tweet back and forth right now, correct?
Sure.
I understand the point, though, but more important that you hear from the president than a talk show host in Chicago. What did you make of the judge's resolution to this? The president, if he would be persuaded, should just mute you. You would still then have access to what he has to say.
I mean, I can only speak for myself as one of the group of plaintiffs, but for me, that wouldn't be a sufficient solution. My voice shouldn't be suppressed in any way in this forum that he's created, and I just want to be unblocked and unmuted and participate like any other citizen in this conversation.
So the complaint then is not just that the president can't see what you write, but you can't be involved in that conversation on his feed, correct? I mean, is that where the First Amendment comes in?
I mean, it's that, right, that you can't participate in the conversation and that he's decided to omit us based on our viewpoint, which they've conceded, and that's kind of a startling thing, right? But no, I can't reply directly to the president. It's definitely an impediment to participating in conversations for the respond by his tweet.
Rebecca Buckwalter-Poza is a law and politics reporter for Politico, CNN, Democracy Journal. She writes on Latin and LGBT communities. Her website is Buckwalter Poza, P-O-Z-A, B-U-C-K, BuckwalterPoza.com. Rebecca will stay in touch, and surely the judge will come up with a ruling soon. I understand maybe early this summer, so good luck to you, and let's stay in touch on this.
Thanks so much for having me on.
We've come home from some Sunday Easter brunches and planted flowers, mowed the lawn.
Yeah, you know, it seems like I was saying that we've only really had like one. Usually it's a few teaser warm days. We haven't had any teaser warm days, just one of that I can remember.
Yeah, several weeks ago, it was like we had some real pops and then nothing. This has got to end. When I get to be king, it will not be like this. Somebody just sent us a text. And by the way, on my Facebook page, I'm inviting you to post pictures. Is this from Facebook or did this come in via text? This is a text, which is fine, but please post them on my gallery on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John of your Loyola Rambler colors. Here's a woman who has her nails. Every other one is, you know, what is it? Maroon gold, or whatever the colors are. You can tell I'm new to this. And then the next person says, hey, John, I have none boxers. which is thoroughly inappropriate. Last set of texts. Hey, John, I, along with about five others, swim in Lake Michigan year-round. Yeah, but you have those wetsuits on, which, by the way, God bless you. That's amazing. But this guy did not have that. John, the freedom of speech is not the right to be heard, says Don. We were talking with a reporter who's been blocked on Twitter by the president. And this one says, John, if the president fires people on Twitter, it's an official communication avenue and should be public access. His rallies screen people. No one can come in willy-nilly because those are considered campaign stops. Fair enough. We'll follow that story. It's 1:39 on WGN. One last note about that. Leo, you wanted to say what? You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, John. Real briefly, long before we had Twitter, if a politician, whatever their status was, president, alderman, whatever, if they had a public forum and I couldn't go because of work, I'd have to rely on the press, TV, radio to let me know what happened. And if I didn't like it then, I could either call him up or her up or send a letter or what have you, or just tell people I know, I think the person's wrong. But all of a sudden now, because we have this electronic communication, like we should be able to hear it right now. And I think that's not the point anymore. I think we're too narcissistic that we have to hear it directly from the president.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm glad you called. Thank you for joining us, Leo. We are going to have this conversation again, if nothing else, when the judge issues her ruling and then the other side appeals it. Remember the other day after the election, and maybe the day before, we were talking about that item on the ballot here in Illinois. Certainly I saw it in Cook County. I presume you did, too. And it asked if we should, for recreational purposes, legalize marijuana. It said you'd have to be 21. We treat it like tobacco and alcohol and therefore tax it. And it was one of those leading referenda, too, right, where you go, well, gee, why not? I voted no on that because now I'm just the last guest I had on this topic was a guy from Kentucky, and DuPage County brought him up, some medical and political officials there. And I don't know that they have an axe to grind, really. I think they're just all about health. It was medical professionals, but they brought this guy in and he was down on pot. He didn't love it for medicinal purposes, and frankly, he wasn't for it at all for recreational purposes, even though the pendulum is swinging the other way. Now, here's another view on that. Michael Moskowitz is an author and he is a physician, a board-certified doctor in both psychiatry and pain medicine. He's the co-author of Neuroplastic Transformation. It's a workbook sold in 50 countries. His website relative to that is the number one searched website about this in the world. He is also a practicing physician in the San Francisco area where he treats many of his persistent pain patients with medical cannabis. Doctor, you're on WGN Radio in Chicago. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, we've got it right here in Illinois, at least, in that we are allowing doctors to, I think prescribe is the wrong word, but you can get marijuana to treat your pain here in Illinois. That's a good thing, right?
I believe so, yes.
And 40-some states have that now. Almost makes you wonder why 10 of them don't.
Well, it actually is up to 44 states in the District of Columbia, and 6 of them don't. Yeah. The reason it doesn't exist in the other states is because this is really an individual state's issue, and those states deemed it something that they weren't ready to get into yet. Sometimes that's because of cannabis being what it is, and sometimes it's just because they don't have the administrative wherewithal yet to actually run a vast program like this. It's a very difficult thing to run medically.
Well, do we know how to use it?
Standpoint.
Do we know how to use it medically? I wonder about that. I mean, if a doctor says, oh, boy, the pain's really bad, he'd go get some medical marijuana. Are there different strains? Are there different prescriptions? Are there different doses? I wonder how good we are at recommending and using it that way.
Well, for one thing, physicians aren't, as a group, particularly good at the specifics of the treatment, but they are the ones in every state that has any kind of legalization of medical cannabis. They're the ones tasked with certifying people. You're right, we can't write a prescription, so we can't say on a prescriptive paper, get this strain, use it this way, take it 3 times a day, etc., and go to a pharmacy, people are certified, they go to usually to dispensaries when there are those that exist in the state, or they do something online to receive the treatment. But at that point, in most places and with most patients, the physician role kind of fades out until they have to recertify the patient, usually in a year.
But who's guiding the patient then when they go to the dispensary?
Usually it's the bud tenders, that, as they're called, in the dispensary. And these are the people that actually are the salespeople for the cannabis. And they generally have no medical training, and they don't really understand the science underneath this, which is rich and deep. And anyone who says it isn't hasn't looked.
Well, what do you make of that process?
You mean the way that it's played out?
Yeah. I mean, that strikes me as being a little...
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Finish your point.
It's why I wrote my book. The problem was, in the beginning of this, working with my patients with it, I was doing the same thing. I was sending them to a dispensary. I didn't really know what to advise them because I had never been taught anything specifically about this. I knew some of this. I knew a lot of the science behind it, and I felt confident that this was a reasonable treatment. But it became apparent to me quickly that walking into a dispensary for people that are not used to using cannabis is a terrifying experience. It's overwhelming. The products there are indecipherable. They have wild and colorful names, which I personally enjoy, but they don't tell you anything about how that strain works or doesn't work. And there really is a vast difference between different strains because there are 9 active plant cannabinoids that have been determined clearly in basic science studies and excellent research published in the best journals to have medicinal properties.
Does it work? Does it treat symptoms or ease pain? I mean, how pronounced or productive would you say marijuana is this way?
Well, let me give you a little example of a prospective study that I've been running in my practice for the last 20 months. So I, on the patients that I've treated with this, I've kept their a separate record in a database to look and see specifically at how they managed pain, stress, the sleep, quality of life, energy and focus, and then if patients were on opioid medications, what percentage lowered their medication. So of the 161 patients I followed out over this period of time, what we found was that 87% had reduced pain. That reduction of pain wasn't just people saying that their pain was reduced. 68% of them reduced their opioid medications, with 11% coming off completely. And you know, I have a very complicated pain practice. This is not a general pain population. My people have had pretty serious injuries, and most of them have had multiple surgeries and have a lot of residual pain, and that's why we're treating them. So that number was phenomenal. And as far as sleep's concerned, 83% had better sleep, 73% had less stress, 76% reported better quality of life. Most interestingly, energy, 53% reported improved energy, and 43% reported improved focus. I thought those were going to be negatives, and of those two, only, I think, 7.1% and 7.8% were worse. So this has been a phenomenal treatment, and it's helped me massively reduce the opioid use that our patients were having to use to control their pain, and it's certainly been quite a boon. The other big thing is that cannabis has no lethal dose, and so if you look at this whole opioid crisis that's going on in the country, the problem with opioids, there are several problems, but one of the worst ones is that they have the potential to kill people. Cannabis does not, period, and that is really another remarkable thing. The other big thing I'd say is if you start expanding out, not just looking at the different strains, but also the different presentations of how these things can be used, from being smoked and vaporized to being rubbed in a cream or directly on the skin, it isn't an infinite treatment. And so to say medical cannabis works or medical cannabis doesn't work is silly. It's what works for what condition and under what circumstances and how you get it to work.
Yeah. I wanted to describe for you a scene where a friend of mine, a person I know. I wouldn't say we're close friends, but anyway, in Colorado, he works at a store that sells recreational marijuana. And some of the symptoms that people come to him for are the very ones which you as a medical doctor are prescribing the medicine for, right? So people come in and say, well, I have high energy or low energy, or I have pain, or I can't sleep, or I'm really anxious right now. And then they talk about the different kind of pot they can buy there with wild names, and it's kind of fun, and he feels like he's getting good at it. But this is the recreational retail of it. Talk to me about what you think of that, and what do you think of Illinois getting into that business in a minute on WGN Radio. By the way, Sister Jean's press conference was one for the ages. She holds court in San Antonio. Details on that also in 11 minutes on WGN. We're talking to the author of Medical Cannabis. Michael Moskowitz is in the San Francisco area. He is a pain management physician who frequently treats his Bay Area patients with medical cannabis. Just before the break, I asked him to talk a little bit about people I know who are selling it retail for recreational purposes. Talk a little bit about that, Michael. Welcome back.
Hi, thanks. Look, you know, my view of this is that I'm an expert on the medical use of it. As far as recreational use of it, I have opinions. And my opinion is that the greatest public health crisis that we've created is by making this a Schedule One drug comparable to heroin and cocaine and methamphetamine. And we've put, you know, literally millions of people in jail for possession of this, where in other states, people walk into a dispensary and buy it to treat their medical conditions. To me, that is the worst public health crisis that we've created out of this whole thing. And I think the people that have been imprisoned for possessing this should be released yesterday. This is a terrible tragedy, and 4 out of 5 of these people that are imprisoned are people of color. And so, to me, this is just the epitome of an unjust and overly punished set of laws that have existed across the country. So I certainly am not against the idea of this being legalized and recreational cannabis being used, but the goals of recreation are completely different than the goals of medical. You know, in recreation, people want to be altered, and in medical, they want to get well. Sometimes those two kind of have a place where they cross each other and where they both are involved. But, you know, if you look at the various strains that people use, they're all about high THC and recreational, and they're about high CBD, CBDA, THCA, THC, et cetera, in medical. It doesn't have to be smoked in medical, and almost always it's either smoked or ingested.
Do your patients get high, doctor?
Some do, but it's not the whole goal of medical is to teach people how not to get high, so that this can be a viable treatment that they can use around the clock.
Yeah.
So some people reserve getting high for in the evening when they're home, or just for getting THC in their system because it's an outstanding analgesic. It's, I think, probably the best anti-neuropathic pain medicine I've ever seen.
Listen to this.
Doing this for 40 years.
Well, this texter said, I smoked pot for 30 years every day. 15 years ago, I quit for work. I got high a couple of weeks ago, though, with an old buddy, and the pot these days is way too strong to legalize it. That's all I got to say. What do you say to that?
Well, I say that, you know, he certainly exceeded his limit of what he was comfortable with on the amount of THC he had. But that can be regulated even with today's pot by just using less. Again, this kind of points out the difference between medical and recreational. Most medical users want to make sure that they can use this without getting high. And I would say, you know, there's a whole range of THC levels in these plants. We've got some that are super high at 21%. Probably in the old days, they were more like 9 or 10%. And now we've also got some that are super low, that are down at 0.3% of THC. And they've got super high levels of CBD or THCV or some of these other active medical cannabinoids that do not get you high. Hmm. And so the goal of this, again, is to really sit down and figure out a plan of how to use this without being stoned. And when we treat people medically, we titrate this up usually in tinctures in either alcohol or oil tinctures that they can take orally, drop by drop by drop. And so we can kind of find that spot where people are not having effects they don't want to have and are beginning to have the effects they do want to have.
Medical Cannabis is the book. Michael Moskowitz, MD, MPH, is the author. It's a guide for patients, practitioners, and caregivers. If you are at all anywhere near this business as a patient or as a practitioner, this is the book you should have. And we'll visit again, Michael. I appreciate your time this afternoon. Obviously, this subject's just ramping up here in Illinois, so we will be in touch.
Okay. I enjoyed talking to you.
Michael Moskowitz, MD. It's 151. Again, the book is Medical Cannabis.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
What we do.
Here's John Williams.
All the way until 3, and then we bring it down a notch. No, we don't, actually. That's Roan Annan. They do a great job. Yesterday, boy, did they do a great job. The
Lord have mercy.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis was delayed because of White Sox baseball. I was so depressed. The Cubs, of course, have to hit a home run on the first flipping pitch. Fine, I'm happy for them. I know this is a building of Cubs fans in a city that loves the Cubs. And I just didn't want the White Sox to pale in comparison, because we're going to pale in comparison this year. Steve, I just used the word we. And so then it's 4-0, and we don't even seem to know how to swing a baseball bat. We scored 14 runs.
Yeah, I checked in on the way home, and there was a rough couple of
first four innings.
Yeah.
And you know, Ernie in production is America's biggest White Sox fan. He is the Nick DiGilio of the White Sox, because Nick is our biggest Cubs fan. At least that's my assessment of it. He was so loud. Ernie was literally skipping and yelling up and down the halls. Did you hear him, Violetta? We have soundproof studios. He was, of course, you're on the other side of the building, but Ernie was all over this place yesterday. And I find myself jumping up and high-fiving him, too. 14-7.
Well, you were calling for an opening day grand slam.
I wanted an opening pitch grand slam.
You did have a 3-home run performance. That's not too bad.
I know. I should have. I was that close. It's 209 on WGN. Hey, listen, Mark Kelly is in our studio. Give me 5 minutes with the commissioner of the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events in the city of Chicago. Mark, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. A big Pale Hose fan, so I was very happy yesterday.
You're a Southside guy, huh?
I am.
How do you feel about those of us who could not name a player on the White Sox last year who are now big White Sox fans? Because I'm one of those Johnny-come-latelys.
I'm not. I could name you every player, their stats, their fielding percentages.
Really?
It's sick.
Is it okay that I'm new to the club?
Of course it is. We need a couple more members of our club.
Yeah. I think GN's going to help them that way, and I also think they're going to help themselves, because while these kids won't win the World Series this year, rebuilds are slow processes, but it's more fun to watch a team rebuild than fall down, and it's all going to get better now.
Well,
that's what I've been told.
I think there's still a chance that they may surprise everyone and be a darn good team that gets better and better as the season goes on.
Well, they're in first place. They're undefeated.
They are.
You were on my show last spring as they were ready to unveil the Riverwalk for the season, if you will. Great big day. You had balloons and press conferences and microphones and bands. And it snowed about 8 inches that day, as I recall, or rained. It was a monsoon, wasn't it?
It was miserable.
Yeah.
It was miserable, but we smiled through it.
Yeah. So are you going to do something like that this year?
We're going to do better. So, again, we'll have fireworks at a waterfall of fireworks three bridges. We'll have music. We'll just all kinds of great new programming on the Riverwalk, new sculptures that we'll be unveiling that will be very powerful. There'll be a lantern procession at night several times during the summer.
Down the river, in other words?
Down the Riverwalk. Everyone will be encouraged to join in. It becomes a community celebration in a way to animate the Riverwalk.
Should I circle a date on my calendar for any of these particularly?
All of them.
Well, what's the first one?
The kickoff, flummox the commissioner. The kickoff is the week before Memorial Day. It is May 18th.
May 18th.
Friday will be the pyrotechnics off of the bridges, and 19th will be a full day. That's the Saturday of programming in the river.
I saw a story, we all saw it yesterday, that on the Merchandise Mart, the facade, the side of the Merchandise Mart, this gigantic building right on the river downtown, you are going to use projectors to project art on it, correct?
Correct.
What's unique about this?
Unique. We talk about, to use a baseball metaphor, we're blowing it out of the park. So this will be the world's largest permanent video mapping projection system. Doesn't exist anywhere else. There's video mapping festivals where, for example, the Sydney Opera House, there was a well-known festival where that building was illuminated. But this is all the time. It's Vornado, the owner of the Mart, is leading the way on this, and it's entirely dedicated to art. No messaging, no branding, no sponsoring.
What kind of art are they going to project on there?
Well, we'll see. We'll be commissioning the first illuminations will be in October, and there'll be some commissions for Chicago artists who will show us the power of this form.
Will it be photographs, or will it be, paintings that are projected up there?
Well, think of it as a new art form that you've never seen. It can take a painting, but then it can pixelate that painting. It can activate that painting. It can disassemble it and reassemble it. But it also can be original work created specifically for that wall. It can be moving images. This is so different than we all know the sort of attack of images that you see in Las Vegas or on Broadway in New York City. This is the opposite. So it's not LED lighting. This is very soft, elegant, artful lighting and projections.
Projected onto the side of the Merchandise Mart itself. And you said this to me off the air, in 4D quality.
4K quality.
4K quality.
It is, the eye cannot see better than what it's going to project. So you'll see pristine projections, and at the same time, the architecture and the windows and the shapes of the building are also very present. So it really plays with the eye, because there's no bending of light because of the lasers.
Right, and this is the problem that you previously explained to me, too. Just tell me if I understand this. The problem would be if you projected it against the building with not a perfectly smooth facade, then the light would have to bend around corners, it would distort the images,
right.
You'd get shadows, etc. So these are lasers that are actually projecting this onto there.
Well, the lasers map out the wall that then tell the projection system where the light goes. So the light is perfectly calibrated to every square inch of the building.
So I'll still see and appreciate the topography, if you will, of the side of the building, but the image will look flat or smooth or something like that. It'll be appropriate.
Yeah.
And will it be faces like we have on the obelisk at Millennium Park, like that?
Well, since it's art, it'll be everything. It'll be allowing for the imagination of our artists, both here in the city and around the world, being offered this new canvas, being offered what has been often just too expensive for an artist even to think about.
Do you know what some of the images will be?
No, not yet.
You don't?
I can imagine.
Well,
what
you've
some
got
of
to
the
get
images.
On this. When is this thing going to debut?
It's going to be in October.
October.
2.6 acres, 25 stories tall, two blocks long.
Isn't that amazing?
And we believe that it is likely to become as iconic a public art piece as the Picasso, as the Bean.
Will you do a Mona Lisa? Would you just say, hey, let's throw the Mona Lisa up there for a day?
Oh, that's too predictable. That's too easy.
I don't think that'd be terrible. How about the Last Supper? Because that's a horizontal scape. You could do that on Easter Sunday, or I don't know.
Yes, wouldn't that be wonderful?
I don't know. But that's not a terrible idea. Okay, how about this? A boat. Do a long boat, because then it would be, sort of against the river where the Merchandise Mart is, and it would be, wow, look at that boat by the river. How about that?
John, it's a good thing that you're in the broadcasting business.
Okay, then give me an idea. What would you like to see on there?
I want the artists of this city for them to think through. I don't want it to be my image. I want it, the artists of the city to realize, oh my gosh, this is now mine, and I can take my work, I can rethink it. I can take my work and put it forward on the wall. Yeah. I can play with it on the wall. I can pixelate my work. But I also, what I want more than anything is original new work.
Are you looking then in Chicago? Are people listening
yes.
now? Would you? How would they submit something to you?
It was just passed by the city council a couple days ago on Wednesday. So we have to quickly move to our next phase of this. We're going to be having a meeting with the artists of the city to explain the system. We're going to be talking to the cultural organizations of the city.
But you'll reach out to people and say, what have you got?
Absolutely.
And you don't have that website up and running yet. Can't submit
that's
that.
Still.
Would you like a picture of me and Steve Bertrand and Elif and Violetta?
If we have your full permission to rework that image and play with it and
I don't know how I feel
pixelate it and disassemble it.
I think we'll look great the way we are.
No, we the artists want to play with you, John.
We can always look better.
This is fascinating to me. Hey, can I ask you a question about the bean?
Sure.
Do you have anything to do with the bean? Is that your baby?
D-Case, we manage Millennium Park, so I think you could say it's our baby.
What do you make of Houston getting a kind of a vertical bean?
Well, I have a bit of a different take than the playful dialogue in the Tribune.
The Tribune is ripping theirs.
In the end, someone who strongly believes in the power of public art, I want public art in every city, everywhere, and Anish Kapoor is a hero. What he did for Chicago is a gift, and that someone was inspired by what happened in Chicago and tries to in some way find their own way into that energy field is good for them. Also, good luck, because the bean has become one of the most iconic public art installations in the world. It's not our Eiffel Tower. It's the world's bean. And we just came from Millennium Park. There's right now today on this a little bit chilly day. There's just thousands and thousands of people. So Houston, I hope it's as impactful for you, but it will be difficult for you to match what we do.
Hey, back to the side of the Merchandise Mart, which in October will debut this art. Do you have an exact date for me to circle on the calendar?
We don't have an exact date.
You got to get that to me, too, and then I'll get you the pictures of us and you can put
them
up there. Could you project a White Sox game or a Cubs game on the side of that thing? Could you do real-time video?
We could. We won't, because part of the agreement.
I'm full of nothing but good ideas here, aren't I?
Well, if the White Sox win the World Series, maybe I'll break our ordinance. But what's amazing about this is the Mart of Ornato has agreed to invest $8 million in the system and $500,000 a year, $500,000 a year to support it, and there's no branding. There's no messaging.
Nice.
There's no sponsorship.
Well, you could get
there's no broadcasting, if you will.
Yeah.
It is simply for a canvas for the artists of the world.
How about some deer and some rabbits kind of just playing? Imagine that. You're there and you see like a 40-foot tall doe just eating the grass and the leaves and the berries as it walks across the Merchandise Mart. Now, you got to admit, that's a good one.
Okay. Well, here's my thought on that. Animation before Snow White hit the screens was considered not to be an art form. It would be seen before films, but it was a plaything. And then Snow White came forward, and it blew everyone away with the deer and the rabbits. And wow, this is an art form. And I think we're about to see the same thing happen with video mapping and the Mart wall.
Right, but it becomes won't be animated. Art form. It won't be moving. But
no, it can be.
Oh,
absolutely. You could have animation.
Games. Yeah, but
we could have an artist reimagining the White Sox victory parade. There you go. Okay.
And by the way, props to you guys for not taking the easy way, and that is just get Boeing or somebody downtown to put their stamp on it, and every artwork, like in the lower right-hand corner of your TV set that has the network or some promotional tag there. We're used to seeing that. I could see how you could justify that and do that, but then it would mar the art, and you're not going to do that.
We're not going to do that. Think of the power of Times Square, but instead of the sort of attack of images that are all marketing, this is going to be flipped. And so, you know, Mayor Rahm Emanuel's Year of Public Art, we weren't done last year.
Yeah.
We're pushing that idea forward here and across the city.
It's nice to see you in the studio, Mark. Keep doing what you're doing, and we'll get you those videos and pictures of the staff here. And then, by the way, when you do have the date for the first display, and when you have the website that people could send or a way for them to get you their art for display, let us know and we'll pass it along.
I will. Yeah. We'll be talking more about this, and it'll be great to see your face ripped apart and reassembled.
I wish you wouldn't keep putting it that way.
With thousands and tens of thousands.
Where did the time go? We're out of time. Mark Kelly is the commissioner of the Department of Cultural Affairs in Chicago. That's going to be on the Merchandise Mart in the fall, and we just got the word of that this week. Do you guys know how many advertisers have pulled from Laura Ingraham's show because David Hogg posted her 12 sponsors?
Instantly, too. That's the thing. I mean, it happened in a flash.
He said, pick a number, 1 to 12. Sleep Number, AT&T, Nutrish, Allstate, Esurance, Bear, Rocket Mortgage, Liberty Mutual, Arby's, TripAdvisor, Nestle, Hulu, Wayfair. Major American corporations. You would be happy to take their money. Those are big sponsors. Seven of them are out now. Seven of them are out because Laura Ingraham said that he was whining about not getting into some colleges. We don't have a lot of time to talk about that today, but the number is, I've seen two numbers today. One is 6 and one is 7. If I'm wrong by one, it might be 8 by now for all I know. And isn't that fascinating?
But it happened Wednesday, right? He put the call out Wednesday, and by yesterday afternoon, there were 6 that were gone.
And when I heard that she went after this kid, I thought that what she said was really going to be egregious. It was not. It was stupid and mean and offensive and unnecessary, but it wasn't. It was two tweets, and it wasn't a big deal. I mean, you know.
Well, what it was absolutely petty.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it was like,
that's what it was.
It was just bizarre in what she chose to take on.
David Hogg rejected by 4 colleges to which he applied and whines about it. Dinged by UCLA with a 4.1 GPA. Totally predictable given acceptance rates, she said. And then her apology, I don't think, fixed it. She said, any student should be proud of a 4.2 GPA, including at David Hogg. On reflection, in the spirit of Holy Week, mm-hmm. I apologize for any upset or hurt. Really? So if it wasn't Holy Week?
Thank you.
I'm thinking when she says that, in the spirit of Holy Week, no, in the spirit of contrition, lady, in the spirit of I screwed up.
In the spirit of I was wrong.
I wish I hadn't said it because I was wrong, but that's not the spirit in which she did it.
I'm so glad you said that, John, because I've not heard anyone else say that. When I heard that, that makes me angry. When you're invoking, when you're like being moved because I'm such a good Christian, I'm going to do it on this Holy Week. Well, you know, fine. Well, you should have done it last week.
She also said,
for
the record, I believe my show was the first to feature David and noted how poised he was. As always, he's welcome to return any time for a productive discussion.
Actually, every new show in the world featured him when he was being shot at.
It's 2:28. This is WGN. The news is around the corner. The Bright Side comes your way on Fridays. And we've got some fun things for you to do this weekend, all coming up. I swear to God, I was at a restaurant this morning, and I had on my Harry Potter scarf, and I looked up and saw a woman looking at me, looking at my scarf. And I thought, yeah, I'm wearing the Rambler colors. Isn't this awesome? And then I looked at her, and I saw that she had on a college sweatshirt, too, and that at least the lettering was in the kind of maroon Loyola color. So then I sort of did a double take, and then I looked back at her to see if she was a Loyola Rambler fan too, but I was having trouble reading it.
Montana.
And so as I'm reading it and kind of looking at it, it dawns on me that what I'm really doing is staring a couple tables over at a woman's chest. And then I look up and she's looking at me, and then I looked away. It was awkward. And on my way out, I took one sideways glance, and it was a Loyola Rambler sweatshirt, so I feel good about that. On Facebook, one of you posted pictures of you with your faces painted in Loyola colors with the L and stuff like that. And this one says, hey, King John, if you are going out, come to Bar 63 with all the kids. I'll paint your face. They're painting faces Loyola style at Bar 63, which makes me think of fun things to do this weekend. This is a segment we call Fun Things to Do This Weekend. Now we start with some music that you might be interested in on Fridays. What are we listening to, Ellen?
Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein of Stranger Things. They're going to be appearing at Athenaeum Theater tonight at 8. Tickets are $34 to $44 at AtheneumTheater.org.
Is it Athenaeum or Athenaeum?
I don't know. I just winged it.
You winged it.
And what's the name of the band?
They're two DJs, Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein.
Oh, DJs. So DJs aren't really a band, are they?
No.
I know.
They're artists.
I know. No, they're not. They're DJs. Okay, so...
okay.
That's a different conversation. I don't need to go there. So these two guys are doing this. This is the theme from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
They are the creators of that?
Yes.
Is their music always like this? Kind of ethereal and instrumental?
From the show, that's what I know about them.
This is it, huh? So they're in town performing where?
Athenaeum Theater?
Oh, that's right. How do you say it, Steve?
The Athenaeum?
Athenaeum.
She put an N where it doesn't belong.
I'm not saying
no,
they spelled
I don't
it right.
Say, is it? It's Athenaeum, isn't it? Is there an N there? A-N?
Athenaeum. Did I say N too?
No.
Yeah, I think you said Athenaeum. Moving along. All right, Violetta, tell us something to do this weekend. You think it'd be fun?
Well, there is the Bunny Rock 5K. That's at Montrose Beach. It is full right now, but there's a waiting list that you can go. So if you're going to cheer someone on and you want to join in, they're still available.
I'll make this recommendation. I'm stealing it from Jesse Roddy's column in the Chicago Tribune, the Take 10. The Macy's Flower Show at Macy's on State Street continues through April 8th. You need a little shot of spring. They've got the Flower Show at Macy's through April 8th. It's free. Go, Violetta. Oh, no, Elif's turn. Elif, you got one?
The Gentleman Caller at Raven Theater tonight at 8. Tickets are $29 to $32 at raventheater.org.
All right, Violetta.com. Go ahead, V. What have you got?
There's the Dragon Lights. That's at Soldier Field. It looks really cool. It's going to be in the South Lot, and it's like 40 displays of huge, huge dragons and lights.
Loyola Ramblers viewing parties tomorrow. Here's something you might want to do at the NISEI. Nisei, you could bust me for not knowing how to pronounce that if you wanted to, Elif, at the Nisei Lounge on Sheffield at 7 Bar and Restaurant on Randolph, at Timothy O'Toole's on North Fairbanks, and the big screen at the Gentile Arena on Sheridan. They're all watching the Ramblers tomorrow night, a little after 5 o'clock, they'll tip it off. Your turn, Ella.
Creed Bratton has a sold-out show at the Subterranean Sunday night. He is from The Office. He plays himself. But keep an eye out because he was here twice in the last year. So keep an eye out for the next show.
Creed Bratton from The Office plays himself?
On the show, and he plays music in real life.
So is he on stage as the character or as himself?
Himself.
Himself.
Musician.
Violetta, what do you like this weekend?
Andy Grammer is going to be at the House of Blues. That's tomorrow. Tickets range from $20 to $80. Sounds like fun.
Bulls versus the Wizards Sunday at the United Center. You can get tickets. Give me one more, Ms. Garris.
Chicago Wine Fest at Moe's Cantina is tomorrow starting at noon. Tickets are $25 and up.
Enemy of the People still at the Goodman, and folks are still loving that. Violetta, give us one last one.
Winter Jam in Rosemont tonight, 6 p.m. Be there.
243 on WGN Radio. I do kind of like this music.
It's kind of creeping me out.
It's 243. Here's what we're going to do. I'll play a couple commercials, and while I do that, you call or text right now, 312-981-7200, and tell me something that's making you smile. It's time to do the bright side. Hold on a second. I just moved my mouse, and now the cursor is off the button I need it to be on. Now it is on.
Some things in life are bad.
This is the bright
side. They can really make you mad.
Call me.
Other things just make you swear and
actually,
curse.
If you call right now, you'll get a busy signal.
When you're chewing on life's gristle.
So listen for the callers to click off and then you click in. We open extra phone lines and they are all full because...
Hey, always look on the bright side.
People like to look on the bright side. Marcia Lyles from WGN Radio Sales normally joins us to read your text. She's unable to be with us today. Violetta, you get to read the text. You ready to roll?
I am on it.
Go first. What's your bright side?
My bright side is I'm just excited for the Ramblers. I know that's a cop-out, I guess.
No. We never judge.
When you're feeling in the...
Elif, what's your bright side? Why are you smiling?
My cousin who lives in Turkey decided to surprise us and visit us this week.
Steve Bertram, why are you smiling?
I have tickets to see Hail, Hail, Chuck Berry at the Black Ensemble Theater tomorrow. And I'm like, oh, no, it's the Final Four. And then I realize the play starts at 3.
Yeah, I've got a little crisis like that. The Ramblers play tomorrow night. At about the same time, I think my niece is playing volleyball over at the Merchandise Mart. I'm going to have a decision to make this weekend. And they are both part of my bright side. Here we go.
Enjoy.
Let's start with Bill. Hey, Bill, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling today, Bill?
Why am I smiling, John?
Yep.
Because Monday, I'm opening my own business. Tuesday, I get a year older. And as of right now, my bracket is still alive.
Always look on the light side of life.
Hey, Matt, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Matt?
Hey, Big Johnny John. I am smiling because the Cubs hit their first home run of the season on their first tryout. And we are going all the way this
feeling
season,
in the
baby.
Dumps. Be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle. That's the thing.
This is Bronwyn. Why are you smiling, Bronwyn?
Sorry, in a bad Oprah impersonation, I got the job.
That's a good impersonation. Violetta, read a text.
Well, 847, my 32-year-old son is making his confirmation tomorrow. Bet he's going to be the tallest one there.
I'll bet he is. You got another one you like?
773, daughter got accepted to Yale.
Wow. Whoa, whoa. This is Carol on line 4. Hey, Carol, why are you smiling?
I have 2 daughters, and my oldest daughter is going to be 2 on Monday.
Your oldest daughter is going to be 2 on Monday?
Yep, my youngest one is 2 months, and my oldest one's going to be 2 on Monday.
How's the sleep going on at Carolyn's house?
It's more like nap.
Happy days, Carolyn. Thanks for the call. Violetta, go.
630, my first grandchild walked today.
Elise, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Elise?
It's my last spring break, and I'm retiring after 34 years as a special education teacher.
Your turn, Violetta.
815, my dad's tumor is half the size, and chemo is working.
This is Victor. Why are you smiling, Victor?
I want to thank Father David for establishing Loyola University.
Amen. Amen. Can a brother get an amen? This is, it looks like Ramonia. Is that the name?
Ramona. No, my daughter got put down a bid on her first place, and they accepted it, so she's moving out.
Don't sound so.
No, we do not judge. We do not judge. I'll bet they're both thrilled. Violetta, read another text.
309, I'm not wearing a winter coat and sunglasses instead.
Hey, Jim, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Jim?
Hey, because Cubs baseball is back and we got a heck of a leadoff hitter.
Jolly rotten, there's something you forgot.
Carl, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Carl?
First of all, John, the sun is out. And hey, John, are you familiar with Shen Yun?
No.
Okay, they've been advertising the heck out of it. It's kind of a Chinese dance troupe that tours worldwide.
Oh, I've seen.
Anyway, I got a couple tickets for next week at the Paramount Theater in Aurora, so it's supposed to be pretty good.
That sounds nice. Look on the
right side of life. Put that on our list of things to do. Read me another text, B.
219, headed to a Good Friday service and then home for the annual tradition of watching Life of Brian.
Well, they'll appreciate this then. Hey, Dave, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Dave?
My kids and my grandkids are all happy and healthy. They're all working, and I never had to tell them what job to get, and they're living their lives.
You know, that's enough right there, isn't it? You don't need to win the lottery. You don't need to have something fantastic. If you've got your health and happy kids, you've got it all, don't you, my friend?
Yes, you do.
Thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. You can call or text to that. We read them on Fridays. Violetta, go.
Taxes are done and filed, 630.
Yeah. Didn't say if they're getting a return.
708's getting a puppy. 815, the White Sox are now on the best radio station in America.
Thank you, and they're undefeated. Go, go, White Sox. Here we go now, sing it home.
Always look on the bright side.
Hey, Mike, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, sir?
Hi, John. Our daughter just gave birth to Grayson, our first grandchild, on Monday.
How excited are you?
Over the moon.
That's what I hear. That's what I hear. Mike, congratulations. How about John? You're on WGN online. 12. John, you're on the air.
My daughter and son-in-law just had a beautiful baby boy, 8 pounds, 14 ounces.
Wow, how about that? 8 pounds, 14 ounces?
Well, maybe it was 8 pounds, 16 ounces. I don't remember.
The operative number there is 8. Wow. Hey, Christopher, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling?
My friends won a $500,000 off a scratch-off ticket.
What?
Serious?
Yep, it's
when?
Crazy.
Where? When?
Up in Fox Lake.
Wow.
Can I have some?
I know. I have so many questions, but all of them lead to me finding your friend and hitting him up for a loan. So
we're only 20 years old. It was awesome.
Oh, wow. What are they going to do with the money? They're going to buy a car, a house, save it? What's the plan?
He's a mechanic, so he wants to pay off some student loans and then try to open up his own business.
Wow. Christopher, thanks for the call. We love that. Boy, how about that? Violetta, read another one.
Just a follow-up on those taxes. I think they're getting a $16,000 refund.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
And then 630 just sent in Roy and a picture of her granddaughter with an Easter bunny.
Enjoy. Hey, Sally, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling today, Sally? You're on GN.
I am smiling because I have 7 children, 15 grandchildren, 7 great-grandchildren. All are healthy and at work. I am so blessed.
That's the idea. All right, one more from Violetta.
312 just got some bubble wrap in a package, and they're having fun popping. Side of life.
That's what I'm talking about. On Fridays, we ask you to tell us some good news in your world, big or small.
Sometimes it's the little things.
Rokan's in the studio.
I am.
I had to laugh because do you buy the coffee for your show every day?
Apparently I do. Well, Anna buys it. We sort of, you know, we alternate. I do a couple days. She does a couple
You guys
days.
Come in with big carafes and boxes and yeah. glasses of coffee and foamed things. It's
have you
amazing.
Heard? Have you heard the show? It's highly caffeinated.
It's, I'm not sure it needs the caffeine, yeah. but either way,
you know, radio was built on cocaine, and since that's no longer good for us or for anybody,
it's frowned on. Let's just say that.
Yeah, it's frowned on. Crack gave it a bad name. We decided to go with coffee. We decided it's basically the same root chemical, and so we've gone with that.
All right. So you got say you buy 4 a day.
So I was all right. So I was at my accountant.
$3.
Well, I was visiting him at the federal lockup, but he was doing my taxes from there.
Did you smuggle him in a sandwich?
Yes, I did, and I slide the taxes under, and then he slides them back to me. And he
I can't hear you. Go up closer to the box.
he loves this joke, by the way, when I tell it. Anyway, we were going through expenses, and he said, and you know how like your credit card? I have an app that I buy all this stuff on, and so it just accumulates all of the stuff in one place. And I saw the number.
Are you able to deduct your coffee purchase?
I'm not trying to deduct my coffee purchases, no. But I just saw it because it was in this list of things. What would you get? I mean, I was okay. sort of blown away by this.
I've done some math.
All right.
4 coffees, $3 a coffee, 5 days a week, 50 weeks of the year. But Anna buys sometimes. I'm going to say you buy 2/3 of the time. I have your coffee budget at $2,175.
My God. You're almost on the exact number.
What
it's
is it?
$2,121. $2,121. How about that?
That's amazing.
Was
amazing.
By the way, that's a used car, Ro. I know.
Don't even begin. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, all right, that's more than I paid for my first car was $1,600. So I could have gotten my car and it gotten refurbished, for that $2,100.
The down payment on our first house was $5,000.
Yeah, there
this
you
is
go.
Half my first house.
Yeah. I mean, that's what that's
this year in coffee.
This year in right, which is the name of my new podcast. I just have this amazing ability to spend money. Apparently, according to my accountant. So
I mean, everyone has to be good at something.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny. My brackets are terrible, but my Rokon bracket is really good right now. I was only $53 off your annual purchase.
That is unbelievable. Because I know we did this on the air a couple days ago, and everybody's like, oh, $1,000, $1,100, and they thought that was crazy. Yeah. I thought that was crazy. When I saw the number, I said to my accountant, and he, you know, in his office, which happens to be right around the corner here, and he said, you can come over here. We have it for free every day.
Yeah, we got a machine up on 7. It's not the same.
It's not the same.
What are you going to do on your show today?
All right. It's very packed. Kevin Powell is live at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio for us. He's got some fresh Sister Jean tape for us. We'll be hearing her pearls of wisdom in advance of the Final Four commencing tomorrow. Season Sunshine will be here. You got your Tom Skilling. Max Weinberg, the drummer for, a little guy named Bruce Springsteen, who has had limited success in the music industry. And, of course, you remember from Conan O'Brien, he's going to be here.
Isn't that funny? The first thing I thought of was Conan, but I know why I thought of it from Conan. But, I mean, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
He's going to join you.
Yes. He's
going to play the drums?
He's coming to town. We're going to talk about his appearance when he's going to be here, coming to City Winery. He's got this amazing show he does with these guys, these New Jersey guys.
Huh.
Like Sessa Johnny Asbury Jukes guys. And he has been touring with them for the last couple of years. They do a jukebox show, as they call it, where you call out a tune and they do it. And when you watch Max Weinberg, Hall of Fame drummer, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame drummer, play, you're like, oh my God. You know, that little mini kit that he's got and everything? Yeah. It's just, he is the most fun to watch. So he'll be with us. And also the guy who makes the bats for all the greats, David Chandler. You see those big black bats with the big gold C on them in Major League Baseball? You see, there might be a guy named Chris Bryant who might have one of them.
Wow.
He's going to be here. He designs these bats, and since it's the start of baseball season, both the Sox and the Cubs. Sox set a record yesterday.
How about that?
For home runs. The Cubs' first pitch, first swing, home run. We'll talk about the bat technology. All that coming your way. How about that? That's a good Friday show.